Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Just quickly, welcome to John and retired to Stephen. John's an author, previously a priest, a well-travelled man who began his life as a Murray Bridge boy. He now resides across the border in Victoria, something we will forgive him for as we welcome John Barber.
Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you for the welcome. And I'd like to start tonight by acknowledging the Ngarrindjeri people, the traditional owners, custodians of the land here. And I'd like to pay my respects to the elders of the Ngarrindjeri Nation, past and present, and extend that respect to other Aboriginal people. And again, thanks, Tim, for organising tonight. And of course, Chris, I think, was also the guiding light behind getting things going. Thank you both very much, and to the library staff for having me here. It just feels good to be here. It feels like a completion of a circle to be back here tonight. And I'm like happy to talk about myself, as we writers are. I hope it won't be too boring for you. But I'll start by saying that another Tim, the Australian writer Tim Winton, in his most recent book, Island Home, explores the idea of how landscape, especially the landscape of his childhood, infuses and affects his own writing. And for him, it's the landscape of the coast around Albany in Western Australia, which was what affected him. But for me, it's here. It's these landscapes. Murray Bridge, the Murray, the Coorong, the coastlines of Port Elliot and Victor Harbour, the Adelaide Hills, and of course Adelaide itself. Directly and indirectly, they're very much part of my own writing, and Murray Bridge is a very huge part of my own family's story. Now, my great-grandfather Thomas Bartlett settled here at the end of the 19th century, and he established a quarry along the river at Swanport. And that quarry supplied a lot of the stone for Adelaide buildings that were sort of growing up at the time, including the railway station, now the casino. My grandfather used stone from the same quarry to build the house in which I grew up in. Some of you may remember on the corner of Stanley Street and Adelaide Road, where I used to sit on the front fence when I came home from school and eat sauce sandwiches, I remember, for some reason, which sounds revolting now, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. And his stone also built the Holy Redeemer Catholic Church, where I was an altar boy. Now, my father, Wilf, managed the motor business next to our house, and my mother, Celeste, nursed at the hospital with other notable nurses like Matron Randall, and for a short time she was, I think, acting matron. And they met in Murray Bridge. They met at I've forgotten how to pronounce it. Beauchamp's Cafe. Beauchamp's Cafe.
Yeah.
I keep giving the French pronunciation. Beauchamp's Cafe, which I suppose in the 1930s was the social centre of Murray Bridge. And I did check out and I could see the building is still there anyway. My father was a councillor and with his friend Ted McCabe initiated the idea of a swimming pool in Murray Bridge, because he regarded the river as such a dangerous place to swim. And partly based on the experience at the age of 14, he rescued another boy from drowning in the river. And I've still got the medal that was given to him at the time. So my links to this town really feel unbroken. Primary school at St. Joseph's Convent, and lovely to see other friends from those days here tonight too. All the memories associated with growing up in this town, the big memories, like the 1956 flood, and I'm happy to have my cousin Helen, who was born in Murray Bridge and evacuated to us in 1956 because Renmark was disappeared under the water. So those big memories, the small memories too, like Diamond Park, the caged peacock in Diamond Park, which I used to go to sleep at night hearing the cry of the peacock. I still remember that. So those very large but very small memories too, I hope they never fade. And they all infuse my life, and I think also my writing too. Now, I left Murray Bridge at about the age of 13 to go to Ross Trevor College, where I boarded for some years and then secondary studies. Then I went on to study philosophy and theology in Sydney before becoming a Catholic priest. And I spent 10 years in the Philippines in that role during the Marcos martial law years, which were pretty interesting sort of years to be there. Now, I'm sure you've heard of Imelda Marcos on her shoes, that sort of one aspect of the Marcos years, but it was a pretty interesting time to be there. And I worked in the southern island of Mindanao, where there was a war of Islamic independence going on, and also a civil war, the communist New People's Army. And for a young man, that was a pretty exciting time to be there and be part of that. And many of my experiences during that time found their way into my first novel, Towards a Distant Sea. Now, I left the Philippines and I left the priesthood in 1980 and returned to Australia and came out as a gay man. I guess you could say that's a trifecta, three things in one go. And then I embarked a number of short careers, many of which I think have also found their way into my writing. So I was a kitchen hand, for a start, and then I was a waiter. I was a movie extra, and my most memorable moment was probably an on-screen kiss with Sigrid Thornton on All the Rivers Run. So if you look back at the movie, you'll see me there doing that. I was a funeral assistant for 2 days, which wasn't my thing. I was a community development worker in public housing in Melbourne for quite a few years, a massage therapist, a call centre worker, and then finally I returned to university where I did an arts degree and then a MA in professional writing. And then I worked there for quite a while until recently as a tutor and a lecturer. In 2001, I undertook a TAFE course in professional writing in Geelong, near where we lived, and soon my features and stories began to be published in magazines and newspapers. And then that went on to, in 2005, I published my first novel, Towards a Distant Sea. This might be the point just to sort of give you a little bit of an idea of, I've got a little video actually that somebody has done to give you an idea of the story, which might be the moment now. Hoping to get technology working to just give you an idea of what that is about. So that was in 2005, and probably should just also was based on my life story in the Philippines, the time I spent in the Philippines. But it wasn't really an autobiography, so I sort of used stories from other people to different events and sort of put them together as a fiction piece. And it was just before that I met my current partner Stephen, and he's part of that story too. And so happy to have him here tonight. We've been together for 31 years now, which I think is something to be very proud of. Then a little bit later, I seem to do things in every 4 years. So in 2009, I put together a number of my short stories into another book called All Mortal Flesh. And a lot of those stories did come out of those short experiences that I had, those different work experiences, Philippine experiences, family stories, all sorts of sort of different experiences. And then, more recently, in 2013, I published my last novel, Estuary, which I think some of you have read. Now, I sort of mention this particularly because it does have a connection to Murray Bridge, particularly into this whole region, to the Coorong, particularly. It's the story of a man who's living in Melbourne who comes back to Adelaide for the funeral of his aunt. And then through that, he meets up with a number of Indigenous people who are friends of his aunt's. And that sort of takes on another whole story, a journey for him to discover a lot of things about his family. Now, I'll tell you, there were two things that sort of motivated me, two family stories that motivated me to write this story. And I mentioned my great-grandfather before, Thomas Bartlett, who had the quarry in Swanport. And over the years, I sort of reflected on the fact that that's all very nice, you have the quarry in Swanport, but he and perhaps a lot of other people who started to develop the Murray Bridge area also displaced a lot of the Narrangeri people who were living here quite happily probably at the time. So I sort of tried to reflect on what it meant to have that sort of a character in a book who had, if you're looking at it years later, how that would have affected the Narrangeri people down to today. And the second part of the story was really from the other side of my family, my mother's family, her sister, Eulalie, who was an artist and a musician. But along the way, she suffered from mental illness, and she spent a lot of time in Glenside Hospital and had ECT treatment and was very drugged up. And as a child, I sort of saw that it changed her life and destroyed her creative life, really, totally. And I always thought if she'd been born later, she probably would have had a different life. You know, it would have been a lot easier for her. So I always thought that hers was a story that needed to be told. So in Estuary, I've sort of combined those two family stories together, not in a fictional sort of sense, and then brought in sort of lots of other details as well. So talking of Estuary, if I can manage to do it now, I'd like to show you also, if I know how to get rid of this, and I don't.
Click escape. That should bring it back.
Perfect, thank you. So this is just gives you an idea of what the Estuary story is about too, if you haven't read it. And it was only this week, staying in Adelaide, that my first experience ever to go on a cruise on the Coorong. And actually, I've never done it, you know, in all the years of my life, to actually be there at the mouth of the Murray, and it was just a fantastic experience to do that. You'll see that sort of turned into a bit of a video, because along the way I sort of had some contact with, you might have noticed this Ink to Screen, who are a small boutique film company in Sydney who look at books and find ways of bringing books to the screen, developing them into movies or TV series. And at the moment, they're taking on Estuary as a possibility of making it into a movie. But the other big development for me is Towards a Distant Sea has also been taken on, in a sense, by the same company. And instead of filming it as a film, they're actually taking the same character and they're calling it Beyond the Distant Sea. So the same character now from Towards the Distant Sea is living in America, in Venice Beach in America, and is an investigative journalist. And there's a whole new story about him and the experiences that he has. And currently that's actually advanced quite a way along the way to being a TV miniseries. And at the moment it's been rewritten by Ink to Screen in Sydney. They're turning it into a product that will be of interest to a producer in Los Angeles, and they have a producer in Los Angeles who's actually interested in the project, and they're going to America this year to try and take that project and two other projects that they've got sort of further ahead. So it's very exciting. I never thought we'd sort of get to that. And I do happen to have a short video too of the Beyond the Distant Screen, I think. Or Beyond the Estuary, it's called now. Beyond the Distant Sea.
It's gone. No, it's not going to happen.
That's all right. We'll leave that for the moment. I might perhaps get Tim to have a look at that when he comes in. I thought I'd just sort of finish, give a little bit of time for questions, and wow, it's all happened in 15 minutes, so it didn't take as long as I thought. But I don't want to hold you too long and just sort of give you a bit of a flavour of things. I thought what I might do just before I did finish and give you a chance for any questions was to just read some little short bits from my books. And I was looking at earlier and trying to find bits that sort of had Murray Bridge connections. And in my collection of short stories, I found a story which I call Melting Moments, which is really about my mother. And the first section is really just a description of being in the kitchen in the house in Murray Bridge as a child with my mother on baking days, and just that whole sort of feeling. And the melting moments was something she used to make all the time, you know, for school fates, and I'm sure your mothers did too and you remember them well. It's just a reflection on her life around food. But I'll just read the first part because that concerns the kitchen in Murray Bridge. She lets him lick the bowl while the biscuits cook in the oven. There's just enough of the sickly sweet mixture for him to swirl round and round, then taste from the wooden spoon. He puts his tongue into the bowl as she checks the oven. The kitchen is a warm, comfortable room on these afternoons. From the shelf, the old brown Bakelite radio announces in its strident voice, "Portia faces life, for those who are in love and for all those who can remember." He wonders if this Portia is like his mother. The wood stove purrs like a contented cat. She lifts its circular cast iron lids to drop in mallee roots from the firebox, clanging the lids down with a little metal tool, then stands at the table and boxes the pastry round the big brown bowl, pulling it back and forth like a concertina, coaxing its sticky, shiny bulk into soft plasticine sheets onto the floured board, ready for steak and kidney pies. Afternoon sunlight creeps up the lead light door, then fingers its way slowly in red and blue shimmers along the wall of the passageway toward the front bedrooms. And there's more of that story, but that's sort of the Murray Bridge bit. And I read a little bit about Out of Distant Sea too, which is, it's got a bit of a South Australian connection, I think. It's sort of a reflection on the same house in Murray Bridge where I grew up, and sort of based on a real experience too, where my brother Michael and I used to share the same bedroom, I remember, and we'd talk and talk and talk at night until whoever sort of fell asleep first lost the competition. So it was a very competitive sort of thing. And I've called this character Gabriel, even though my brother's name was Michael. I'm lying in bed in that room I share with Gabriel. We're talking quietly as we always do until one of us falls asleep. I can hear Mum and Dad chatting softly in the lounge. They're listening to the radio. My bed is near the window, and the window is halfway up because it's a hot summer evening. Suddenly, out of the corner of my eye, I see movement at the window. There's a little hole in the fly wire screen, and a finger is poking through and beckoning to me. I scream. Somebody is after me. Dad and Mum come running into the bedroom. There's somebody on the veranda, and they want me. Dad goes running out the front door with an umbrella in his hand. Mum sits on the bed and puts her arms around me. After a few minutes, Dad comes back and says, "There's no one there. I think you probably imagined it." Gabriel seems to be asleep with his face towards the wall. I knew that one night they would come back for me. And the last little bit that I'll read from history. The main character, Leela, who's the artist and the musician, I probably need to tell a little bit of a story because I think it's sort of it sort of fits in with some of my earlier writing, because I had a bit of a fascination, I think, for my aunt and what a creative person she was. One of the very earliest pieces that I wrote that I had published in the Good Weekend magazine, you know, goes with the Age in Melbourne, was about her. And I went to the hospital and I got her records for the time that she was in hospital, and I used a lot of those. And it was sort of just a reflection on her life, and, you know, perhaps she could have had a different life, you know, if she'd lived later. And a couple of days later, after the piece appeared in the magazine, I had a phone call from the newspaper who said that someone had contacted them and they'd like to speak to me. So, of course, you know, I was okay with that. And the person who contacted me was a woman living in Sydney who had been my aunt's pupil music pupil all those years ago, and had no idea that my aunt had, you know, has been in Glenside Hospital for all those years and had that sort of treatment. But she said she was a musician and a composer, and she said the only reason was that she had attained that was because of my aunt, the way that she sort of treated her. And I thought, that's right, you know, she did something, she had some sort of effect. So there was a sort of a completion, I think, there too. But this is sort of a little bit about that character. And this is sort of the early in the story where the main character, the nephew, comes to Adelaide for the funeral, and then he goes to the reading of his aunt's will after that, and that's there where he meets the young Aboriginal man, Cubbagee. No thanks, said the young man, whose name I couldn't remember being told, but I sure need the smoke, so I guess I've got to go outside for that. He was already on his feet, shaking hands with Taylor and heading towards the door. Perhaps I could leave the parcel till tomorrow if that's okay with you, on my way back to Melbourne, I added. Maybe I could just forget the parcel. This was the parcel of his aunt, the things his aunt had left to him. I wasn't sure I wanted to be loaded with memories for an aunt I hadn't seen for years. The young man and I left Taylor and Jade to the tinkling of cups and descended into the silence onto King William Street. So you're not a smoker, Seth. Got none of your aunt's vices. I used to. Gave it up. I still drink, though. I tried to make it sound like a joke. We stood at the bottom of the stairs. I wasn't sure what two beneficiaries of a will were supposed to say to one another when it was all over, especially when I'd already forgotten his name. It's Cubbagee, Seth, remember? I don't think we need to do the handshake thing again. At least he had a cigarette to roll. I wasn't sure what to do with my own hands. I put them in my pocket and then took them out again. Mum reckons you should visit the Glenelg house before you go back to Melbourne, but then she's always telling people what to do. He cupped the end of the cigarette against the cool breeze of the street and struck a match. Aren't you curious to see it after all these years? She'll be there tomorrow if you want to come over. Okay, I'll leave that bit there. I'll probably, any questions from anybody? And hoping if Tim comes back in a few minutes, I can just show you that last video piece too.
I have a question about the name Bartlett. My dad had a friend, Tom Bartlett, who was a carpenter, and his son was Tommy. Are you any relation?
So where did they live?
Right in Mulgunda Road, which is in, if you look at Mulgunda Road, and...
In Mulgunda Road is the hospital.
Yeah, or it's the other end of Mulgunda Road, the Morisette Road end. He lived there.
Well, the Thomas is certainly the common name, isn't it?
And young Tommy, or Tommy as he was called rather than Tom, built the two-storey houses down there in the Mulgunda Road. He died in the late 60s, early 70s.
I can't sort of make a direct, you know, relation without sort of, you know, thinking...
Well, with a name like Tom Bartlett, and you said your granddad's...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sort of, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
Well, the great-great-grandfather who came to Adelaide was Thomas Bartlett.
Right.
And then, you know, my great-grandfather was Thomas. So it seems like, you know, perhaps the name sort
Tom
of carried on.
Yeah, Tom would have been... in the 60s, 1970s.
So there's quite a few Bartlett sort of still around the area. Right. Yeah, so
yeah,
there's Martin probably some connection.
Down,
yeah.
Like that. I went here four times. And some of the family names, I mean, my first wife's family were Johnston, the flock as in Johnston Park.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But what blew me away, you know, was a picture in the library just out there of somebody whose name was Parrish.
Mm.
From the 1800s. And he's the absolute image of my ex-brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so close, in fact, that when I took a photo and sent it to my son, he showed his mother and she said, why has he never got somebody else's name under it?
Yeah.
It looks so much like a brother.
Yes, yeah.
So Murray Bridge is a fairly tight community in that sense.
Mm.
A lot of them are transient too.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I guess the problem is sort of we hope we don't lose all those sort of contacts and those memories and those connections, which is easy to do with our sort of faster way of life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a friend living in Lewin now, Eric Mayle, and the stories he can tell are just mind-blowing. He's in his 90s this year.
Yeah.
He's just written a history of the river, all the river boats, and it's a really tight read. Really.
Mm. Well, good that it's been written and that sort of history is kept, isn't it? Yeah. Really needs to be.
I'm not sure it's been published, but I read his original document, and it was pretty. I found it very interesting, and I like history, so
Yeah, I'm sorry, I can't be more helpful about that exact relation, but yeah, there's probably a few Bartlett still floating around, yeah.
Are you looking at writing more books?
Well, the only other thing I've written is, I've written, because of this project, the television project, Beyond the Distant Sea, I have actually written the first draft of the book to go with that, 50,000 words I did at the end of last year, which I've sent to a publisher, but I'm sort of still waiting to see what happens. So nothing sort of planned after that, really. Sorry, Tim, I'm just having trouble playing that video. It seems to say that it's disappearing. I don't know, I sort of, every time I finish something, I never intended to write one book, and I think, oh, I've written three, you know. There's probably no, after this one, there's probably no more than that.
You never
know. No, you never know. Any other comments or questions while Tim does the IT thing better than I can?
You're too kind, John.
Well, you did it before, perfectly.
See, you can wear an 8-year-old when you want one.
Exactly.
I can be an 8-year-old, Rob. You can see me in the crate.
You see that in the paper, 15-year-olds hacked into the school. I thought, that's great. It shows a man with the future.
Got a great career ahead of him,
I'm
sure.
Well, yeah, but that's it. All you need is somebody to guide him.
Decided not to. That's all right.
Down by the technology tonight, John, unfortunately.
That's all right, we did pretty well, I think, you know, so far. I'll read a couple more paragraphs and see how we go.
The more you talk about that, the city in Adelaide, the plural, and the comment, I read that, and yeah, I enjoyed it, but I didn't remember that you were.
No.
And I kept relating to it, thinking, oh, yes, I know about that. I know people like that, oh, yes.
But
connection to it.
But even in writing, I was sort of aware of how much I'd sort of forgotten, or, you know, I'm sure other people know more about the Coorong and about, you know, I had an idea that my great grandfather had a quarry somewhere, and I think it was Swanport, but not sort of, I don't know much more than that, really. So, sort of in line with what you were saying about losing a bit of contact, you know, with history and family history. And,
John, is Swanport what you can see from this car park just up the road here?
Well,
across the river.
The locals, true locals, will probably have that. It's further down the river that way.
Where's the bridge? Oh, where's the bridge?
Yeah.
Oh,
the bridge.
Oh, the new bridge.
Yeah. Oh,
the
bridge.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Oh,
the
new
bridge area.
Yeah.
Oh.
It just looks like
it's
might have been a quarry on
that
side.
Oh, we could replace.
Whether you get development now, it's called the quarry.
So where was that in relation to the new bridge? Further
Swanport
down
bridge,
downstream.
Swanport bridge goes over the Swanport Reserve.
So there doesn't seem to be any sign of quarries on that from what you see from the bridge,
well,
is it? Yeah, yeah. They're gone.
There's no quarry left.
No.
One
last bit,
Jack. Okay, I always like last ditch efforts. Okay, we'll try and fill in that. Shall I read something?
John, what were some of your experiences when you were actually a priest in the Philippines during all that trouble with Marcos and the army coming in and terrorising people and so on?
Yeah, I was in Mindanao, which is the very southernmost island, which is partly was an Islamic area as well, but was also where the communist New People's Army were carrying on a revolution against the government. And I worked with a group of, you know, lots of church things and that, but I worked with particularly with a group of what we call peasant farmers, who were farmers who sort of worked for landlords over generations and generations, who never got the proper share of crops that they sort of worked for because the landlords, you know, took most of it. And as a result, you know, often their children would get sick and they didn't have enough medicine for them and they were in poverty, basically. So we saw the church's role as well as spiritual, but it was to help the justice issue too. So to try and sort of help them to sort of stand up against the landowners and get what was justly theirs. So all that sort of political sort of human rights stuff was part of what we were doing too. But of course with Marcos and martial law, he didn't want any sort of anybody to sort of question anything. He just wanted everybody to be totally complacent and go along with everything he said. So it was very sort of dangerous for Filipinos particularly who stood up, you know, and tried to sort of do the things that we were doing. Not so much for me as an Australian, you know, I could sort of leave any time, really. So there were lots of little times where, I mean, some of my friends that I worked with were actually arrested and held in detention for some time. The main person, who's sort of one of the characters in this book, a farmer called Eugenio, who was a really good friend, he, with the farmers, he stood up for the rights under the law to the landowner. And because the landowner was sort of in cahoots with the legal system, he ended up in prison because he was rocking the boat and trying to sort of change the system. So he was in prison for quite a while too. Some other sort of experiences. One, then Marcos wanted to extend martial law, so there was supposed to be a vote. He had to do it by people voting, but his army was going around intimidating people to vote yes to continue it and not to vote against it. So we took the line that people should be free under the law to vote either yes or no, or to abstain totally from if they thought it was a bad thing. So that was what we were sort of pushing. So the army was sort of trying to intimidate people into doing. And the experience that I relate in here was my experience was in the middle of one Sunday mass, just before the election, before the vote, the people had to vote, in the middle of the sermon where, with the support of the people, I was going to stand up and say, look, you have the right to vote yes or no, or abstain if you think that's the thing to do. And then in the middle of the sermon, suddenly we hear all these jeeps pulling up outside the church, and a whole crowd of soldiers with guns, with Armalites, came into the church, and they sort of stood under the stations of the cross and sort of faced the whole congregation, you know. And they didn't do anything, but they just stood there, you know, as a sort of intimidating act. And it was very scary. So that was sort of one of my own sort of experiences. But, you know, some of the Filipinos had much worse experiences. You know, had more to lose, I guess, than I ever had, of course. Look, don't worry too much, Tim. If it's
on the next one, John? Well, you've done them all.
I've done them all, yeah. We could have a replay, but, you know, I don't think people want that.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right. Look, well, perhaps let's just leave it there. If you really want to look at, stay around for a few more years and hopefully the TV miniseries of Beyond the Distant Sea will be screening at a screen near you. And you'll see the real thing, not just the pretend thing that's up here. Look, thank you very much for coming along this evening. And it's been really lovely to be back here in Murray Bridge and to see some familiar and new faces. And thanks a lot.
Were you there when Carnival Cinema was there?
Yes, I was.